Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of We Are In This Together. Our guest today is Sami Abdullah. Sami, welcome to the virtual studio of Dearborn Blog.
Thank you, Wissam. Thanks for having me.
We Are In This Together is an unscripted, live, nonprofit broadcast by Dearborn Blog to have conversations that become oral history records for our lives during the COVID-19 pandemic, also known as coronavirus pandemic. These are personal stories of our lives during these unprecedented social isolation measures in a globalized world. We have the pleasure of having with us today Sami Abdullah. He's a friend of mine, also the president of Free Thought Lebanon, and a diligent Lebanese civil society activist. A theoretical physicist by profession, Sami is passionate about both pursuing scientific truth and defending basic human rights in Lebanon and the Middle East. His upbringing in a conservative community in Beirut, as well as his firsthand experience in the hardships of religious indoctrination as a young student, propelled him to rebel against the status quo, endeavor to empower and protect free thinkers in Lebanon and around the world, and fight against religious misogyny. Sami's work focuses on fostering the Lebanese free-thinking community, standing up to tolerance, promoting secularism, and countering the narratives and power structures that give rise to religious fundamentalism and sectarian violence. He also manages a community of free-thinkers in Lebanon, where debates and critical thinking are nurtured to combat both biased rhetoric and neo-political correctness that is increasingly being used as a tool for coercion and censorship. Sami has worked extensively to fight against discrimination and the negative social stereotypes that vilify atheists in Lebanon and the Arab world, and has been closely involved in offering protection, guidance, and support to those who have been persecuted and threatened because of their atheism or skepticism. Again, welcome, Sami, and we have the pleasure of having you with us here in the studio.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you.
So you are in Germany, mm-hmm. a city called Leipzig.
Leipzig. Yeah.
And let me show our audience exactly where that city is. So here's Leipzig. Looks like a typical German city.
Yeah, more or less.
Is it a more modern city or historical?
Leipzig is a city that started growing actually recently. Now they call it the second Berlin. Actually, it's mm-hmm. quite close from Berlin, and yeah, it's a mixture between like a lot of greenery and like a part which is like a typical city. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, awesome. So tell us about the situation in Germany in general and in your city specifically.
I think as you've been following, things are slowly getting back to normal in Germany. I'm personally still taking like strict precautions, and I'm still like sticking to the quarantine rules. So I don't really know what's happening in the outside world. But when I go out from time to time to walk my dog or to get groceries, I get the impression that people are, well, almost back to normal. And they still follow the strict regulations of wearing the masks and these things, and it's becoming part of their daily lives and daily routines. But yeah, everything is starting to open slowly. I went yesterday to get a haircut, and this was like very like stressful for me, but they were taking some very good precautions, and yeah.
So for the record, today is May 10th, 2020. The situation basically internationally is that we are at 4,000,006 cases confirmed and 1.39 million recovered, and the deaths has surpassed 280,000. In the United States, where I live, it's 1.35 million confirmed cases, recovered 202,000, and deaths has surpassed today 80,000. In Michigan, specifically where I live, there is over 45,000 cases confirmed, and the death has risen to about 4,343. In Germany, it is 171,000 confirmed cases, and the confirmed deaths are 7,549. Germany is one of the countries that have dealt efficiently with the COVID-19. But there was an article today, Sami, in let me share it with you, in the Guardian, about fears grow in Germany of second wave of coronavirus infections. While protesters call for the further relaxing of social restrictions, scientists warn of a new dynamic. Have you felt anything like that?
Honestly, I think this is it's a certainty, not only in Germany, everywhere. And I've been reading many studies recently, and most of them are suggesting the same scenario, that there's going to be a second, third, and fourth wave, and they are predicting that this might like stay for a couple more years. And if you study the history of pandemics, you would see that it was always the case. Like, there was not a single pandemic where it just happens and then goes away, unless maybe for the things that are not that contagious, you know? So, yeah, it's pretty much expected to happen, in my opinion, and that of many others.
How is the morale of people around you? Is there any fears? I feel like something similar happening in Germany as in the United States. There is some pressure to lift the sanctions from people. Are people there starting to pressure the government to lift the isolation measures?
This has been happening since day one, honestly. And I wasn't satisfied with the way that people were dealing with this. I felt that they weren't taking it as seriously as they should. And yeah, until today, there is always constant pressure on the government, like, to lift it. And right now, I mean, when they see the numbers getting much better, like, the government, they don't have any excuse to tell them, like, why not to do it. So we're expecting this to happen, and it is happening. Mm-hmm. So now in Germany, you can go everywhere. Schools are still closed. They opened for the people who are graduating now, for instance, and those who have the baccalaureate exams from last year in school. And yeah, everything else is open, I think.
Did the students study online when the schools were closed?
Yes, everything is moving online, and until today, I'm even working online. I'm working with some students, like as an assistant teacher, and everything's happening online.
Are you currently also studying at the university, or you're just teaching?
I'm working, and I'm writing my master's thesis. And I'm currently applying for jobs in Berlin. So, yeah, we should start in October. Yeah, so.
How far are you from Berlin?
1 hour.
Do you love the city?
Where I live, or Berlin?
Berlin.
Yes, I like Berlin, but I can't imagine myself living there yet. I'm not a big fan of big cities, you know. I like visiting big cities and living in smaller cities. So maybe if I move there, I will be like staying in like some of the suburbs or somewhere a bit more relaxed, because like Berlin is quite chaotic and yeah.
Although you grew up in Beirut, right?
Yeah, I grew up in Beirut.
Yeah, Beirut is a big city.
I didn't have a choice in that. Now I have the luxury of choosing, maybe.
What's some of the cities that you have a passion for? Your favorite cities?
Not in Lebanon, you mean in general?
In general. I mean, I'm sure Beirut has its place in your heart, but in general, yeah.
Yeah, sure, it does. Honestly, I liked Tallinn in Estonia. It's one of the best cities I've been to. I haven't done enough traveling in this part of the world, in Scandinavian countries, but I would love to. I enjoyed my trips to East Asia. Kuala Lumpur was like such a nice experience for me. And yeah, and there are some little cities that you visit from time to time, like Strasbourg in France. Yeah, I like Brussels, for example, and yeah.
What do you like about Brussels?
What do I like? I like the people in Brussels. And well, you heard something you didn't like about Brussels? Or...
No. It's a little bit, Danny. It's the only city. It's the only big city you mentioned. Kuala Lumpur. But so I was wondering, what do you like? You know, you didn't mention Berlin or Paris or London, but you mentioned Brussels. So it's interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think I need time to answer such questions usually. Like, when you tell me, like, what's a good city, like, I need to recall the places I've been to. But Brussels, like, the feel of being in Brussels was good. I just like the people there. And the city is, like, although it's a big city, but it's more relaxed in a way. You don't feel like you're in Paris or in Berlin. It's much different. I would live in Brussels, for instance. I like Dresden in Germany, for example. I didn't mention this. It's also it's the capital of the state that I live in. It's a beautiful city.
Have you visited often?
Dresden? Yeah, I've been there like 5 to 6 times, I think. Yeah. It's really close from here.
Dresden has took its fame from, you know, the bombing of Dresden. Cities in World War II where it was most bombed. Is there a feel in the city? Is there a feel of that incident in the city?
No, I don't think so. Unless I haven't been to the right places, but I don't think so. Like, the city is a mixture of the Altstadt, which means the old town, and the Neustadt, which means the new town. And they're like just opposites. In the old town, it feels like Prague. And it's quite close from Prague, actually. And the Neustadt, it's like a different place. It's like it's full of these little shops, specialty shops, and it's colorful. It's a nice city.
Interesting. Sammy, when did you leave Lebanon?
I left Lebanon 4 years ago. 4 years ago, even more, yeah. August 2016.
Do you miss it?
I don't miss living in it at all. So I have a love and hate relationship with Lebanon. You know, like, you always have these memories with the place you grew up in. Every person does. And I still like going to Lebanon. But living in Lebanon is such a... It's a very hard thing to do. I don't miss that at all. But I do miss going to the country from time to time, yes. Yeah, but there are nothing in my daily routine in Lebanon that I miss. You know, it's just like these little places which you like going to, these gatherings, these people. Yeah.
So, Sammy, you know, we want this interview is really personal, and it's really about how we are all united in this life during the pandemic. And how the world has become, you know, has been a small village, but this has shown it more clearer to us. But nevertheless, sometimes there are certain questions for each guest I want to ask, because, you know, it's they have some interesting experience with them. So I cannot talk to you and not talk about Lebanon a little bit. So we know that you're an activist. You have been an activist in Lebanon. You still are an activist in Lebanon. And I'm going to display here your website. The Free Thought Lebanon has also played a part. It was part of the late revolution or movement that is still going in Lebanon. The situation now has gotten much more complicated. You want to give us a little bit from your perspective, a brief, what is the situation now in Lebanon from your perspective? And you're in touch with so many people on the ground.
So the biggest headline, I would say, in Lebanon is now the economic crisis, the extreme collapse we are witnessing. Of course, we were going through the revolution and the people were trying to fight against the corrupt system that we have, which resulted in the economic crisis we are facing. But now, like, the headline is this crisis because people are... not a single person is not suffering from this, you know? This is affecting the rich and the poor alike, in a way. I don't know if other people know, but like people in Lebanon, they lost the access to their own money in the banks, literally. And I can't remember the last time this has happened anywhere else. So people are getting hungry. Recent studies have been saying that the percentage of people, Lebanese people who are unemployed is above 70%, and the poverty rates are increasing. And so, as you've seen recently, people couldn't but go down to the streets again to do something. Like, the people are literally dying of hunger. So yeah, it's a horrible situation. And the thing is that you don't see any solution, not in the near and not in the far future. And I'm not being pessimistic here, you know, and everybody's saying the same. So yeah. Many people have been contacting me for tips how to leave the country. Very few people are still working, and those who are getting like discounted salaries. And so, yeah, it's quite horrible. I mean, I feel lucky that I was able to make it here, but I'm really sad for all of my friends and family who are suffering every day from this.
Do you feel that, Yani, a government that is incompetent during such times, such a crisis, the incompetence just is under a microscope. Even in America, the little intricacies of incompetence have been highlighted now due to the pandemic. The issues with the healthcare system, the lack of testing, the lack of action, the politicization of action, because some states, they delayed the stay-at-home order election to the primary election.
Yeah.
In Lebanon, extreme incompetence of governments. Government is almost, it's almost handicapped. With this crisis, it's going to, highlight that in a way that's never unprecedented. And people are going to suffer directly due to that. Is it the government to blame for the crisis of Corona in Lebanon?
I didn't get the question. For Corona, of course, it's not the government who brought the Corona. Maybe I didn't get your question.
Maybe it's not that way.
For how they are dealing with the situation, you mean?
For the lowest level of test, one of the lowest levels of testing, it's completely not in control.
But to be fair, some people are saying they are doing a good job. Some people are saying they are doing their best. There are some very strict regulations in Lebanon. Everybody knows this. There's curfews every day as of 7, 8 p.m. They keep on changing it. People are forced to wear the masks everywhere. And they actually started this quite early, before they did in Europe. But the main problem is the testing.
And, so the reaction has actually been commended. there has been good action from the government.
Yes, but they missed, in my opinion, the most important part, which is the testing. Some people are saying they're not being able to get enough tests, but I think that you should put all of your focus on this, because no matter how much precautions you take, if there's people in the streets who have this virus and are not aware of it, then you're not really doing much. And you know, in Lebanon, in the camps and the poor neighborhoods, people are like much in contact with each other, and it becomes much harder to control the spread of the virus. So I think this is something they can do. For example, now in Lebanon, if you want to go and do a corona test, it will cost you $100. And this is a lot now in the days of this economic collapse, you know, and in the past it was $200. And if you want to do it for free in the only one center that does it for free, you need to be dying, literally. They only let people who are dying to do the tests because they have very limited. People are choosing not to get tested even when they have the symptoms because they don't want to pay for it. And you know, sometimes like the, I don't know how to say it, like this macho mentality that, it's just a flu, whatever, or something like this. And,
Sammy, in 2011, the last elections in Lebanon, right? 2011?
Or 15? I think so. In 2015, I think this was.
2015.
I forgot the dates.
Yeah, because it's delayed and stuff, so it's confusing. But there were independent candidates with an intention to present some solutions to the gridlock in Lebanon, and they haven't really gotten enough votes to create any difference. There's only one candidate among the independents who got voted in, right? Which is Hula Yaqubian. Do you feel that when Lebanon suffers, people are suffering due to their own democratic choices?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this was in 2018, by the way. It was recent, 2017, 2018. We had many phone calls, if you remember, then you were interested and you were trying to help. Absolutely, these people are choosing this mostly, you know, and this is because if you know the structure of the country and how it's, so it's basically you have like six dictatorships, the main ruling parties, and each one of them are feeding their own people, you know, and they do this. Like whenever you want to get a job, for example, people are used to going to the party leader that they follow. And with time, they have this relationship. They know they are corrupt, but they vote for them because they are the people who are protecting them in a way. You know, it's just like tribal mentality. And but I think now things might be changing. I think now things have gotten to the extremes. People are seeing that their leaders weren't able to help them in any way in the recent events, and they have seen what those choices led to. So hopefully in the next elections something will happen. There will be more than one Paula Yaqubian, although like she's there's some question marks around her name even among seculars. So but of course she's much better than everybody else in the cabinet and the parliament.
Right. So again, I don't want to dwell more into this because then it will be a different episode, and we do you are the right person to speak to about that, but it needs a separate program for that. So let's get back to the personal. So Sammy, during this time, have you, because some people really their lifestyles had not changed much, some people did your lifestyle change much with the social isolation?
I wouldn't say a lot. It did change, definitely. I wouldn't say it didn't change. So yes, it did change. I'm not exercising as much, for instance, and this is like a big change. And I'm doing all of my work from home.
Did you feel that you had more time?
Yeah, absolutely.
How did you use that time?
So as I told you, I'm working on my thesis now, and it's a very big research project. This is taking maybe 80% of my time. And the rest, I'm using it to do more physics stuff, because like I'm a nerd, and this is what I do in my free time. And of course, like everybody else, I started watching more series, more movies, and started to build some of these virtual group chats and experimenting what we can do from distance with other people, you know.
Yeah, awesome. What are you working on, if you don't mind me asking, on physics?
I'm working in the research group called Quantum Field Theory and Gravity. So yes, I don't know what else I can say about this.
Can you explain to us quantum mechanics in 2 minutes? Quantum.
1 minute. Yeah. Actually, quantum mechanics is not as like. Yeah, let's not dig into this unless you want to.
No, it's. No, let's not talk about quantum physics. I have a question here from Kathy Brown. She says, what do you think the ideal outcome of this pandemic at a personal level and at a collective level?
The ideal outcome. Ideal as in like the best case scenario, or like what can we benefit from this?
I think what's the best case scenario we can benefit from this?
So first, I think we need to be prepared for some time more. This is not going to end anytime soon. I think the ideal scenario is that this was the biggest wave, and we're going to witness other smaller waves of like numbers increasing and then decreasing again. I think we should be learning much from this experience. Like, this is the thing that governments should be focusing on now. And on a personal level, I think that people should be can use this chance to acquire more skills and do the things they never get the chance to do on their own. I'm not sure if I answered the question, but
So at the collective level, you know, people have, countries and governments need to be more prepared for crises that will always come, because, you know, this is the nature of evolution. Mm. And at a personal level, like as an outcome, how is this going to, do you feel this has changed you in any way?
I think it did, yes. It makes you appreciate things that you were never aware of. You know, like some things as simple as just getting out of your place, having a beer, listening to music, you know, even the things you don't do as much in your usual life, but now you just feel I can't do them anymore, you know. So it's like going to jail is an extreme example, but if you go to jail and there's nothing you can do, then you're going to be appreciating everything else. And I'm seeing this in people. You know, I'm in contact with some friends, and I see them like saying, I miss doing this and I miss doing that. And when this is over, people are going to be like really grateful for and maybe looking forward to do the things they should have done before. And
yeah. Ali Sharafuddin asks, what are some of the things you are accomplishing staying at home during the pandemic? I think you said that you're working on your thesis.
Yes, it's a thesis, and at the same point, it's a like big research topic, and I'm expecting to get published. So this is this is what I'm doing the most. What other things? I'm learning some cooking skills more, you know, experimenting more with different cuisines, and I've always had a passion for cooking. And what other things I accomplished? I think that's about it. It's really mostly physics for me now. Like, I'm using all of this time to strengthen my knowledge in some fields. And
question from Dr. Adnan Jaber, Sami, says, what are we going to remind ourselves about? How are we going to remind ourselves about the lessons we learned during this pandemic? So Dr. Adnan feels that we probably going to forget and go back to normal.
Mm-hmm. I think there are many lessons to learn. Maybe I can put them in two categories, and the lessons are mostly for governments who are in control of things mostly. So like the first one is, you know, that how everybody's been like all of the big countries are trying to buy weapons and prepare for wars, and I think that they've been investing in the wrong place. And I think the next time we want to be investing into something, it would be like how to deal with the next pandemic, because this is how the human race might end, you know. So start thinking of strategies on what to do when the next time this happens, how to increase the medical capacity. You're not going to build thousands of more hospitals, but you can work on a plan which is ready, for example, 3D printing to immediately print like more ventilators and masks and stuff like this. So I think this is something governments should be definitely doing as soon as this is over. And the main lesson we learned from this, I think, is that we should act fast. This is something important. All of the countries who were like in denial in the beginning, they suffered the most. And countries like China, who started acting immediately, are the countries who contained the virus fast. So, yeah.
That's the first category.
No, sorry. These are the two. So the first one was how to prepare when there's no pandemic, mm-hmm. which is by just increasing your capacities and everything. And the second one is what to do during a pandemic. So if a pandemic happened another time, you should start acting fast. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hanan Yahya asks, how are you developing yourself and healing yourself? So in general, how do you heal yourself if you need healing?
How do I heal myself? I tried many times to do meditation, but it's not my thing. But I do some yoga. I think it's relieving. What works on me the most is aromatherapy. So something what I'm trying to do now is like, you know, because when you're staying at home all the time, you can't stay sane. You're gonna be getting into those times, and this works pretty well for me, and I try to get these diffusers and keep the place always smelling good.
Keeping sane in this?
Sorry?
Is your dog doing fine during this?
My dog is doing pretty fine. He's getting to spend more time with me and more time in the forest, because like I live by the forest, and that's not only...
Because I heard that animals sometimes are feeling also weary, that they're seeing their owners too much.
So I was wondering about what does he think is happening, because I usually leave him alone for long periods of time, you know, and he's definitely noticing a difference, and I'm hoping he doesn't get like an anxiety, separation anxiety after this ends.
Interesting, yeah. So some of the light questions, Amr Zahar, a comedian here from Dearborn, asks, what food reminds you of your childhood?
What food reminds me of my childhood? There's something that we used to eat in Lebanon, and I haven't seen anybody else do it. I don't know if you used to do this. It's when you mix watermelon with halloumi cheese.
Yeah.
That's a very, very convenient mixture. Like the way, like the halloumi chews and like the freshness of watermelon. This was a typical thing we'd eat in the summer. And I can't think of this and not remember my childhood.
Do you have halloumi cheese in Germany?
Yes, we do. We have everything in Germany.
You can try it. Yeah. That's true. That's one of our traditional. Peculiar foods. Amy, we want to get some recommendations from you. What book are you reading now, and what book do you recommend for our audience?
Honestly, I'm mostly reading academics, and even when I'm not reading academics, I'm mostly reading physics books. But I recently started reading a book called Skin in the Game by Lebanese-American Nassim Nicholas Taleb. I don't know if you've heard of him. Yeah, Nassim Taleb is a risk analyst and he's a risk engineer, and I really appreciate his books and his brains and everything he does. Also, he did receive some backlash from the scientific community, but this is a big topic. So, yes, this is what I'm reading now. But if I am to recommend something, I would recommend something else. I would recommend the book by Karl Popper called The Logic of Scientific Discovery. And this is something I would want every person to read, The Logic of Scientific Discovery by Karl Popper. Karl Popper is a, sorry?
Can you talk to us about it a little bit?
Karl Popper is a pioneer in the philosophy of science. So, you know, you have science and you have the philosophy of science. Science is what you actually do, chemistry, physics, mathematics. And philosophy of science is what tells you about, for example, research ethics, about what is considered scientific theory and what is not, how do you theorize, what is a hypothesis, etc. So Karl Popper is like the pioneer in this field, and I think this is his best book, in my opinion, and in which he really tells you all you need to know about scientific method, falsifiability, and yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's let me see what year it was written. 1959.
It's that old. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So it talks about the scientific method and how the scientific thinking takes place.
Yes, mostly philosophy of science. Yeah.
Awesome. Film. Any? What's the last film you've seen, and what film do you recommend?
The last film I've seen is this Turkish film called Miracle in Cell Number 7. I don't know if you've heard of it or seen it. It's on Netflix. It's a really touching story. I really liked it. This was the last film I've seen. Other films I can recommend. I need time to think about these questions. This is like always hard. But recent films I've seen. I've seen a film called Midsommar. It's a Swedish film, a bit disturbing for some people, but it's very artistic in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this film on Netflix called,
Can you spell that so I can share it with the audience?
So Midsommar, it's one word, and Sommar is MIDSOMMAR.
MIDSOMMAR. AR, okay.
I think that's the best film I've seen this year, maybe. Mm-hmm. But, sorry, double M, not M, Midsommar. Which basically means midsummer in Swedish, I think.
Okay. Interesting. Swedish movies are always very interesting.
And series. I've watched a couple of Swedish series recently that I liked, I think. Yeah.
Really? Yeah. Any recommendation?
Swedish series? There's a series called Quicksand, and it was
Quicksand.
It's a Swedish series as well. Yeah.
Is it on Netflix?
It is on Netflix. Yes. Okay. Now we only do films which are on Netflix. Yeah. And
Music. Anything interesting in music that you'd like to share with us?
Most people wouldn't appreciate my taste in music. I listen to some weird things. I listen to
black metal. That's exactly why we asked this question.
No, I listen to some black metal and weird stuff. But recently, I've been getting into some different stuff. So I've been digging into Iranian instrumental neo-folk music and experimental music. And so it's mostly based on percussions and oud. And I was never into this, but I don't know, recently I just, I have a thing for experimental music. So I felt like checking out like experimental music from these counties, you know. And I'm also interested, by the way, from music coming from countries like Iran, where people, musicians cannot play as freely. So there's always like these small underground communities, which are always the best, you know, because when you're under pressure and many restrictions, people seem to produce even more. I've been listening as well to some Sufi music, you know, this is like very recent. It's so like not me, but I've been finding it quite interesting.
Thank you. I have a question from Hadi Al-Dibba. He's a musician from New York. What is the last epiphany or aha moment that you had?
I'm not sure I've had a proper one, but we always have this, by the way, in physics. So in physics, some concepts, they literally takes you years to get them. And you have to go through the same thing this year and the year after and the third year. And there's always this moment when you really grasp the idea, you know? So I think this is the closest to a moment for me. And it constantly happens. And I'm sure that any mathematician or physicist, they completely relate to this. So, yeah.
Okay. You don't want to explain further because it might be a little bit academic?
I'm not sure there's something in particular that I want to describe, but it's always this idea that is really hard to grasp, you know, and you just try to read again and read again, and then it comes the time after years sometimes, and you just finally get it. Like, for example, there's a field in physics called general relativity, mm-hmm. and it's one of my favorite fields, and some ideas in this field took me years to really grasp. You know, and that's an example.
Right. Yeah, I find it very interesting, the thought experiments of Einstein. It's mm-hmm. just very interesting to me that there's an experiment that you can just do by thinking. You don't need any tools, any equipment. And when mm-hmm. you experiment, you discover something. And that's like crazy. You know, that's an amazing idea that you can just sit alone and do this experiment.
Yeah. They usually use thought experiments to just suggest some contradictions or some, like, for example, the Schrodinger cat, which tells you how a cat is both dead and alive. And this is a thought experiment. And they just like create some scenario in which like the outcomes are contradictory or they pose some problem or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The question from... start with the positive one. What is the best thing COVID-19 pandemic made you discover about yourself?
The best thing?
From Kuwait.
Sorry?
This question is from Talal Matar from Kuwait.
Mm-hmm. The best thing that COVID-19 made me discover? Well, it made me discover that I can function without a society. This has been always a fear, really. Like, you feel that you're dependent on people, and that when you're staying at home alone, you always get maybe more depressed, and then you need to get out to get like some socializing and stuff. So yes, at first I was scared that okay, how long can I last? How much can I do this for? And but then I discovered that I'm much better than I thought, and. I'm even mentally prepared now to do this for another year and a year and a half, and I'm not scared of the idea. Yeah. So, yeah, I think I discovered that I'm stronger than I thought I was.
Yeah. No, I feel you the same way. I've adjusted. I work from home, and I've been spending a lot of productive time. Finished a few projects that I wanted to finish, and working on new project. But what has happened lately with me the last few days is that I've become like obsessively mm-hmm. working on my projects and in this productive zone that I would spend like 16 hours straight working on something in the basement, not even like with a window, you know? Mm-hmm. And completely happy, like, you know, there's enough dopamine in my brain that's making me completely happy and satisfied. And I feel that if it continues like this, I'm not sure if it's healthy or not, you know?
Yeah, aside from the health risk, I think that the best way to make use of this situation is to learn a new skill. Take online courses, learn something new, because we're not going to be finding the same jobs. We're not going to be, so like the best you can do now is just get prepared for when this is over. You know, if you can get a degree online, if you can do anything.
Have you been taking anything online?
I'm taking language courses.
Oh, you are? Okay. What
language? I'm taking German.
German. I'm improving your German.
Yes.
I've taken this master class. It's called Master Classes, masterclass.com. I've been taking courses on it. It's like sometimes I'm working on something that is a little bit manual, so I can watch a course at the same time. So it has been interesting. I've taken like 4 courses so far. And also chess, chess.com. I feel I've been playing chess all my life. I feel like this is the first time I'm learning chess. That's the thing about learning, that when you're not learning, you don't know what you're missing. Mm-hmm. So I always thought, what do I need to learn chess? I know chess. Maybe I can read some books, some tips, some moves. But then when I started learning properly, I understood that I'm ignorant in chess. Like, this is the first time I feel like, okay, this is how you do it. This is the real way you learn chess. So I highly recommend learning something properly, not just, you know, just because you know how to do it, it's fine. Like, you might, you know, you might think that you play soccer or you play, I don't know, anything, an instrument, a guitar. But when you start learning it properly, it will open up so many doors. And if you have the talent already, it will be just a lot easier.
Yeah.
And Hadi Shatil, I don't know if, do you know Hadi from Lebanon?
His name is familiar.
Yeah, he's a graphic designer and an artist in Lebanon. He also
very familiar.
Teaches in few colleges there, graphic design. What is the worst thing COVID-19 pandemic made you discover about yourself? And that's the last question, and might take a little
The worst thing that it made me discover about myself, I'm not sure, help me out. What was the worst thing you discovered about yourself?
Take a minute, think about it.
I can't think of anything. Why is that?
Is there something that you discovered in yourself that surprised you? That you didn't know about yourself? No?
Not really. I can't think of anything. Maybe I discovered how bad of a cleaning person I am, you know?
All right. How good that is.
Yeah, like now I'm sitting with my fiance all the time, and by watching how much, for example, she cleans, I feel that I'm horrible at this. Although I do clean more, but this is something I need to work on more.
Thank you, Hadi. This is the last part of our show. Usually we ask you to add a question that you ask, you'll answer, and then it will become a habit that we ask it to all our next audiences.
Okay. So because most of the questions are really light, I'm going to break this and like go a little bit hardcore and ask something that's a little bit more philosophical. It's a discussion actually that I've been having with many people during these days. So the question is, like, in the times of a crisis, or in this case the pandemic, what do you think about authoritarianism versus diplomacy? So do you think like governments should be very strict in the way they impose the lockdown, or do you think they should be more diplomatic, more democratic in their approach? I think it's a controversial issue.
Mm-hmm. How would you answer it?
Honestly, as much as I'm, you know, pro freedoms and everything, but I don't mind whenever there's a security concern to really go authoritarian. And I would go for this, you know. I do not support authoritarianism, but experience is showing now, at least, that the countries who went like strict lockdown, very strict rules since day one, are the ones who suffered the least. And that's my personal input. Like, you don't play with these things since day one. You just like abuse people, you know, and because this is for the best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you too. I feel that it's kind of democracy is kind of overrated in the way that we put a lot of value for each individual vote. The mm-hmm. more I've been seeing politics, the more I'm convinced that I don't know what is the proper the better way of doing business, but doing business politically, I mean. Mm-hmm. But I feel like we need experts to vote on their subject matter rather than, you know, one of the interesting things at the vote of the Brexit during in Britain, Google reported that there was a surge in the research and searching Google for what is the Brexit. So you have these, you know, thousands and thousands of searches, people who are voting for something that they are Googling for the first time. You know, and it's determining the, there are experts, you know, I remember Richard Dawkins saying, I didn't vote for the Brexit because I'm not the expert on it. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, experts need to vote on their things, but because as we've seen, people don't necessarily know what is the best thing for themselves. And that's the purpose of government. Yeah,
I agree. I'm not pro-democracy, honestly. I'm really not pro-democracy. But I'm pro-democracy when it's put like against totalitarianism, for example. For example, if you have a medical condition in the building, you know, and there's 30 people living there, I don't care what these people vote. If there's one doctor in the building, his opinion is going to be more worthy than that of the 29 other people. And this is how things should work. This is like what you were saying, actually. Mm-hmm.
It is kind of risky at the same time. There is a risk, but I mm-hmm. think the risk is less than the risk of democracy.
Yeah. It depends on many things. We shouldn't have a general fixed rule. We can always have like something in between, depending on situations. And,
yeah. Mm. Okay. With that, Sammy, it was really a pleasure having you with us. It was great connecting together again.
Thank you, Wissam.
I know that there is a lot of subject matter, again, that we can talk about, but we wanted to keep this personal mm-hmm. and about our life today. And stay safe, and we hope to see you again. Any final thoughts?
Any final thoughts? I hope that we watch these videos years from now and remember that we witnessed a pandemic in our lifetimes, you know, because as horrible as this is, I think it's an experience. We got to experience this, you know, and this is something you can add in your CV, and you experienced it and you survived it. So, hopefully we watch these videos years from now and appreciate what we have.
Definitely. Thank you. Thank you, more on Sammy's work, please check freethoughtlebanon.net. We are in this together is brought to you by dearbomblog.com. This episode will be uploaded on YouTube immediately after we end. It will also be, on Dearborn Blog channel, and also it will be on its Facebook. Mm-hmm. And also it will be on the podcast, Dearborn Blog, which you can find on Spotify, iTunes, or Stitcher. Thank you. Thank you again, Sammy.
Thank you, Sam.
Till next time, our next guest will be this Tuesday with Shireen Suleiman. She's a fashion designer from New York. Have a great day.
Thank you. Goodbye.